I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today is Dr. Laurel Clark, Doctor of Metaphysics, Doctor of Divinity, who is a teacher with the School of Metaphysics, a past president of that organization, and the vice president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. She is also an interfaith minister, counselor, and author. She speaks frequently about dreams, visualization, and developing intuition to educational institutions, professional organizations, and businesses. Her most popular books are Intuitive Dreaming, The Law of Attraction and Other Secrets of Visualization, Dhamma, Finding Your Soul's Purpose, and Karmic Healing. More information is available at http://som.org/board-of-directors/laurel-clark-d-m-d-d-. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Clark, and I look forward to hearing about dreams, meditation, and visualization. Now first, why are nighttime dreams important to us?
Well, one thing that seems pretty clear to me is that when there is an experience that is universal to humankind, such as dreaming, everybody dreams, there has to be some purpose for it. And what I've learned through my studies with the School of Metaphysics is that our nighttime dreams are a way that our inner self, some people call it the soul, the subconscious mind, that inner self communicates to us to tell us about our own state of awareness, our own attitudes. So it's a very important experience for self-awareness and self-reflection.
Great. And how do we remember dreams?
The best way to remember dreams is to get some type of a notebook that you have dedicated to that purpose, like not something that you use for other type of journaling, something that's specifically dedicated to remembering dreams. Put it by your bed at night, or if you're going to take a nap, anytime you go to sleep, with a pen or a pencil, and make sure that it's within arm's reach so that you don't have to actually get out of bed. And then tell yourself before you go to sleep, I want to remember my dream. And you can even have a thought like, it will be very easy for me to remember my dream. And then what's really important, if you can, is to wake up gently without an alarm clock, so that you have some time to lie there in bed, being still without thinking about your day that's to come, and then write down whatever you remember. A lot of people who think they don't remember dreams actually do awaken with some fragment, some snippet, sometimes it's just an image, and if they discount it, then they'll forget it. But if you write it down, even if it doesn't seem important, what happens is that you start to remember more of the details, and over time, you can even remember more than one dream. You write down one dream, and then that triggers the memory of the dream that came before it, and pretty soon you can write down almost all your dreams that you've had during a sleep period.
Great, good. And the key thing is, we don't want to just dream, but we want to know, what does this mean for me? And this is a big order, because I understand that our dreams are all specific, because like with me, if I dreamed about a hospital, being a nurse, that might mean something about work, but for other people, it might mean something about your health condition. So are there common symbols, or how do we know what our dream means for us?
You know, that is a great question, and there are many different philosophies about how to interpret dreams. Ultimately, the final authority on any dream is the dreamer. What I've learned is that there is a language that is mm-hmm. what I would consider universal, meaning that in the physical world, a particular thing has a function.
Mm-hmm.
So in the example you're using, a hospital,
mm-hmm.
it is a building. It does have a function, which is for healing. So mm-hmm. in some respects, I would say that any dreamer who dreams about a hospital has something to do with a state of mind or attitude that has to do with healing.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're saying, the individual interpretation also enters in, since for you, it's your place of work.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody else, maybe they've never even been in a hospital, how that applies to them, what it means in their life and in their existence, that's individual, and that's for the dreamer to determine. So one thing that I encourage people to do is to write down their dreams and then reflect upon what was going on in my life the day that I had that dream.
Mm-hmm.
Not even so much physically what was going on, but what was going on in my thinking. You know, was I thinking about healing? Was I thinking about ways that I want to improve? Was I thinking about how I could be more productive, which that's how I would look at it as a place of work, you know, wherever someone works, that when they have a dream about that, it has something to do with their own attitudes about productivity or state of mind of being productive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there some other common symbols besides the hospital?
Yes, there are many common symbols. I would look at any type of building
mm-hmm.
as representing a state of mind. And
mm-hmm.
so the particular type of building, if it's a place of worship, like a church or a temple or a synagogue, I would say that that is about a spiritual state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a home that someone lives in, it has to do with their everyday state of mind, what they are thinking about or their attitudes in their day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
A car or any vehicle is, in your physical life, a car is something you use to get from place A to place B.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about you, the you who's dreaming, I would call that you a soul or a mental being, a spiritual being. And the vehicle that we use to get from place to place in our life and our existence is our physical body.
Mm-hmm.
So I would interpret a car or some other small vehicle, a small boat, a small two-seater airplane, as a symbol of the physical body. And then again, the individual interpretation enters in depending upon what is happening with that vehicle in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Another common symbol is people. And
mm-hmm.
there are many different levels of interpreting dreams. At one level, any person in a dream could be symbolized as an aspect of the self. So
mm-hmm.
if I'm dreaming about a good friend of mine, that dream could be about her. However, at one level, it's also about me, what that person represents to me. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I see her as being very disciplined, so it's that aspect of myself that's disciplined. Or if I view her as being very outgoing, it would be that aspect of myself that's outgoing. And so that element of dreams can be very illuminating, not only about telling us about ourselves, but also about our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is it that I am drawn to that quality of outgoingness in my friend? It's because I want to be more outgoing myself, that type of understanding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And Dr. Clark, cancer patients want to know, am I doing the right thing in my treatment? How long is this going to take? They have all kinds of questions. And if they watch their dreams, do you know of some dependable sources on the internet where they could pay and discuss their dream and get some help identifying them? Because I think dreams, it's a slow process of learning how to analyze what's in your dream. And you know, the cancer patient wants some help then, right now. So do you know some people on the internet that are dependable?
Well, that's a great question. That's one of the things that I do as a counselor and as a teacher and also a dream interpretation coach.
Mm-hmm.
There are other dream coaches available through the School of Metaphysics. So people can access dreamschool.org if they want to find out about dream coaches. If someone is interested in contacting me individually, is it okay for me to give my email address?
Right, definitely.
It's lclark@som.org or laureljan, L-A-U-R-E-L-J-A-N, @yahoo.com. And people can also do a Google search. The challenge when it comes to finding somebody online is to find someone who you resonate with. So I love interpreting dreams for people and with people. I've been doing it since 1979, so I have quite a bit of experience.
Right. This is so helpful because, as I say, it's something that will help the cancer patients at that particular time. And I have so much faith in dreams because I feel like it's God speaking with us, and you can't have a higher source. But if you don't know what God's saying to us, then it's not that helpful. So, you know, to have someone like you that has been doing this for, 79, 80, 99, almost 40 years, that's fantastic. So I'm delighted to have that resource. Now, what is the relationship of our daydreams and waking visions to our night dreams?
That's a great question. Daydreams come in different forms. There is the purposeful creating of images called visualization. There's also the kind of daydream where images kind of float through our mind, where they come to us unbidden. And I would consider that either to be a function of intuition, particularly, let's say I have a particular problem I've been thinking about or incubating, wanting answers to, and then there's something that just pops into my mind that seems very clear. That type of daydream is very similar to nighttime dreams, where the subconscious mind is fulfilling my conscious desires. And that is, as I understand it, the duty of the subconscious mind. The other type of daydream is when somebody is fantasizing, and sometimes that can be a kind of escape where there's a need to focus on a particular problem or particular situation, and the person doesn't really want to do it or it requires effort, and so they start fantasizing about things that are unrelated to the task at hand. There are times when that can be productive as a kind of relaxation, but there are also times when it's a distraction and can actually produce difficulties. And one of the ways that someone can discover that or discern that is if they find that they're getting into accidents, they're dropping things, they're tripping. Usually that is not a function of the subconscious mind bringing them what they want, but kind of a wake-up call that's saying, hey, you need to pay attention.
Great. Now, is there anything else you'd like to say before we move to visualization about dreams?
Well, one thing that I would like to say is that I just find dreams to be fascinating. They are a means of giving us insight and solutions into everyday problems, concerns. They also are a wonderful resource for creativity. There are many inventions, art pieces, writing, music that have been inspired by dreams. And so one of the benefits of keeping a dream journal, in addition to everyday answers to life, is that it can really open us up to a much broader and wider awareness of ourselves as creative beings. And that can be quite a bit of fun.
I remember Edgar Cayce talked about Singer, who was developing the sewing machine and couldn't figure out how to get the thread in the needle so that it worked properly, and had a dream and woke up. I think the dream was about warriors with spears or something, but he woke up and the dream had solved the problem. And I think he emphasized that you have to do some work on trying to solve a problem and then go to bed, and the dream often will, you know, do the finishing touch for you, as well as you say, sometimes it'll just bring a lot of creativity to you anyhow.
Yes, that is a very good point. And I've heard that story also about the sewing machine. Mm-hmm. The detail that was in the dream is that when Elias Howe was, there's a few different versions, that mm-hmm. he was being mm-hmm. chased by cannibals. In one version, he was being boiled in oil. Mm-hmm. And he looked at their spears. Mm-hmm. And at the point of the spear, there was a hole. Mm-hmm. And so that gave him the detail that he needed for the sewing machine, because a needle that's used for hand sewing, mm-hmm. the hole that you thread the needle with is at the opposite end from the point, and mm-hmm. with the lock stitch sewing machine, the thread is threaded where the point of the needle is.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea that you first work the problem through your conscious mind and then turn it over to your subconscious mind is very important. So it's not a matter of being passive and saying, oh, my dreams are going to give me an answer. It's a matter of using both the conscious mind and the subconscious mind together. It's kind of like a dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Then, Dr. Clark, can you tell us what people mean by visualization?
Yes. Visualization is a process of consciously imaging what you want. And so in the example that we were just talking about, if somebody is trying to figure out how to make a sewing machine, they would visualize what they want to have occur.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody wants a new career, let's say, even if they don't know exactly what kind of job they want, if they visualize their talents, skills, abilities, how they want to contribute to the world, the things that they see of value in themselves, and visualize themselves expressing that in whatever manner it might be, then that is like a seed, that the seed idea that you create through imaging exactly what you want, you release it to your subconscious mind, which is like planting a seed in soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then it literally grows in the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind will draw to you, or you will be drawn toward, people, places, and things that have the resources you need to fulfill your desire.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where sometimes people experience what they call synchronicity or fortunate coincidence, that let's say they're visualizing for the kind of work they want to do, but they don't really know exactly where to look for it. And they overhear somebody talking about a position that sounds similar to what they're looking for. Or all of a sudden, they get a call from a friend they haven't seen in years, and that friend is working in a field that is like what they want.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the ways that I think people can use the internet well, is that it enables us to come into contact with resources that may not be in our physical, you know, close to us physically.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us a more expanded way for the subconscious mind to help us fulfill those desires.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. And how do we know when to visualize or to make something happen, and when to be open to what our intuition is bringing us?
Oh, that is a great question. And I don't know that I have a specific answer to it. I think that's part of what our life learning is all about, knowing when to be aggressive and when to be receptive, mm-hmm. when we should be causing something to happen, and when we should be patient and wait. One thing that I can say is that if there is doubt or insecurity, it's usually a good idea to visualize, because the more somebody lives in doubt or insecurity or fear, if they're not visualizing,
mm-hmm.
the more likely it is that they can get carried away with kind of uncontrolled doubts and fears.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found for myself is that getting a job is a good example. if I want a job and I've been visualizing what I want, the likelihood that somebody is going to, out of the blue, knock on my door and offer me a job, that's not too likely.
Mm-hmm.
So if I look on Craigslist, if I look for places I can post my resume, if I call friends, let them know I'm looking, the more I visualize and put out activity, then the more likely I am that my subconscious mind will bring me resources.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a matter of learning how to listen, learning how to look, learning how to watch as a partner to the visualization.
Mm-hmm. Do you use affirmations along with visualization? Because I know you mentioned earlier an affirmation, and so I wondered if you use that along with your visualization. Say you're looking for a job, and you're mm-hmm. visualizing it, and you're putting out the word to everyone, but are you also using something like the perfect job is coming to me, or something like that, that will give added push to it?
I know a lot of people who do use affirmations to use them more than I do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is a personal matter for me, that I've been a writer and a speaker and a teacher for mm-hmm. my whole life. And within the last year, I have become more involved in visual art.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it seems like a more powerful way for me to visualize is to make collages. So that's, and I do put words on those collages also.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to go through magazines and cut out pictures of what I want and put them on a big poster board,
mm-hmm.
highlighting it with words. What I find is that affirmations work when there is a visual image to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone is saying the perfect job is coming my way, but what they're actually picturing is going to a job interview and getting turned down,
mm-hmm.
that affirmation is not going to work,
mm-hmm.
because the picture is always stronger than the words.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of that is the verbal affirmations will work when there's a visual image to accompany it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Clark, how do we use visualization?
Well, there's many ways that visualization can work. I encourage people to have a few important desires that they want to visualize, perhaps
mm-hmm.
relating to their physical health, their state of mind, their relationships, their physical surroundings. In other words, not to have 100 different things they're visualizing
mm-hmm.
all at the same time,
mm-hmm.
up to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then to start the morning, I like to, after I've written my dreams down, to spend a few minutes lying there in bed before I jump out of bed and get my day going, to just spend a few minutes visualizing the ideal conditions that I want, including the ideal inner conditions, and then to do the same thing before going to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes during the day, I will also visualize. Although, for the most part, while I'm engaged in activity, I'm not consciously visualizing. So doing it in the morning and night is a way to give direction to the mind. And then if there's a particular situation, like a health condition, if somebody's wanting to become healed of a disorder,
mm-hmm.
it's very helpful to visualize the state of health. Or let's say there's somebody who's concerned because they're tired all the time, to visualize how it feels to be energized and relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody wants a relationship, to visualize themselves being filled with love and easily giving and receiving that with other people. So whatever somebody wants, to visualize what it looks like, what it feels like, how they're going to express themselves in that situation, so that it's a complete image using all of the senses, that's what I found to be the most powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what kind of images then might you use with this? I was thinking of maybe a picture of eating fruit and vegetables, or something like that? Because with cancer, we know that the plant-based diet right now is being advocated. And even when I had it 41 years ago, my doctor put me on a vegan diet. So that has something that has held up for many, many years in, as far as cancer, but it also is in the cardiology field and in the diabetic field. You know, so many of the health areas has to do with food. So would that be a good picture to have as you're using the visualization? Or what else could you use?
I do think that that would be a good image to have. What I would highlight it with is feeling nourished and satisfied eating those foods.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people will do activity that they think is supposed to be healthy, mm-hmm. like eating fruits and vegetables. But if they eat the fruits and vegetables and they resent it because they're thinking, oh, I can't have cake or mm-hmm. I can't have a hamburger, then it actually isn't helping them so much.
Oh.
And so that's another way of mm-hmm. being aware of affirmations is to listen to what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm very purposeful about what I eat or refrain from eating. However, I never think I can't have that because mm-hmm. I can have whatever I want.
Right.
The point is, do I want to have that? Am I going to really feel good? I mean, I think about this because I love dark chocolate.
Right.
And I also have found that if I eat wheat, for example, I don't feel very good afterwards. I mm-hmm. start craving sugar. And so every once in a while, I will eat a piece of really good chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm.
And beforehand, I ask myself, is how I'm going to feel afterwards worth the momentary good taste of this? Or sometimes I will visualize myself eating a piece of cake or whatever it is and visualizing that my body's going to receive it, it's going to taste delicious, and whatever I don't need is going to be easily eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's another way to use visualization. However, I would recommend that somebody not try to override healthy choices thinking, oh, well, I'll just visualize it away because
right.
that's kind of
right.
a pretense.
Right, right. Well, I think Edgar Cayce also ate bacon and he said, well, my body will overcome this because he didn't do
right.
it very often. He would say that something that isn't good for you, but he would try it every once in a while. And chocolate, now they're finding that the dark chocolate has a healthy benefit as far as cancer. So, you know, I have a little square of, it's like a Hershey bar, but it's made with stevia, which is a natural sugar substitute. And I have a little square or two of that almost every night when I finish dinner because I was very addicted to sweets, but I don't eat it now except for these couple little pieces. And it makes my day enjoyable knowing that I'm going to have a couple little pieces of chocolate at night. And it's with stevia, so it's not putting a lot of sugar into my body.
Right. And, you know, what you said, I think, is really important. If you do something that truly brings you joy, whatever, I don't even know what the chemicals are called, endorphins,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There
yeah.
are certain brain chemicals that are produced that are health-producing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a difference between doing something that really brings you joy and making choices out of defiance.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people will say, well, no one's going to tell me what I'm going to eat. And they don't even really enjoy it because there's
right.
so much
right.
defiance, anger, resistance to whoever they think is trying to control them. So even though it might be the same substance that they're putting in their body, the
mm-hmm.
attitude makes a difference in terms right. of it not being healthy. So the attitude is very important.
I'm glad you brought that up because that is such an important aspect of, well, it's an important aspect of healing as well as, you know, life, because it's a negative. And if you're positive, you know, you attract positive. If you're negative, you attract negative. And who wants negative experiences in their life, right?
Right, right.
Then is there any research on the value of visualization?
There has been research. I know that some years ago there was a study done with basketball players that had three groups, and I believe that one group practiced physically making particular shots with the basketball. There was one group that visualized and did physical practice, and there was another group that only visualized without the physical practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the group that only visualized did as well as the group that visualized and practiced physically, and they did better than the group that did the physical practice.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's been quite a while now, but I have read Arnold Schwarzenegger, who talked about how his whole life has been a matter of visualization. When he came to this country, he could hardly speak English, and so he visualized to be able to speak English. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Conan the Barbarian, which I think might have been one of his first films, and I mean, he really could hardly speak English. And if you look at how he is now in terms of him as an actor and him being able to communicate as a politician, whether you agree with his politics or not, he was able to communicate well. And he did the same thing with bodybuilding, that he talked about how the actual physical lifting of weights was not what produced the strength and resilience that he had. It was the visualization he did. So I'm sure that there have been other studies. Those are the ones that I know about.
I wonder how much Maria played in his English, because I know that she speaks perfect English, but I don't remember when they got married in relation to when he came to this country or anything, but I'm sure that she was a very positive influence on his speaking also. Then, what do people mean by meditation?
Meditation is interesting because there are a lot of people who practice meditation, and there are many different views of what meditation is. The meditation that I practice is a practice of first using concentration to clear the conscious mind of extraneous thoughts, to produce a kind of inner silence, and then to focus on listening to the creator, the high self, the source, whatever you might call it. I know that there are other people who use the word meditation to describe what I would call guided imagery, where they listen to music or tapes as a way of relaxing. And then there's a big movement nowadays toward what's called mindfulness meditation, which is what I would call concentration, a practice of causing the body to be still, breathing, and then focusing on the breath. So that focus on the breath as it comes in and it goes out, I would call that concentration as a prelude to meditation. And what all of these have in common is causing the conscious mind to slow down, to calm some of that brain chatter or internal dialogue, to be able to have more of a state of peace.
Casey always distinguished between prayer and meditation by saying that prayer is when we speak with God, and meditation is when God speaks with us. So I think, would that be the mindful meditation? Because the process is where you slow the mind and you usually focus on an affirmation and then you blank your mind. And then if you start to think, then you go back and use your affirmation again.
I would agree with Casey in terms of meditation being a two-part process, that the prayer is a time of speaking to God, and then the meditation is a time of listening for the answer. And sometimes the answers can come in the meditation itself, like people will see a vision or they'll actually hear a particular, sometimes it's a scripture verse, sometimes it's a word. sometimes the answer does not come in the meditation time itself. There's a state of peace and being centered, but the insight might come throughout the day that all of a sudden an inspired idea seems to just pop in their mind. Oftentimes it's when they're doing some kind of concentrated process that doesn't require thinking, like driving or washing the dishes or doing something where their body might be active but their mind is not consciously thinking, and they receive insight or inspiration. And I think that the more that somebody meditates, the more that that process evolves.
Then, Dr. Clark, is there more that you want to say about the process of meditation or how we do it?
Well, I think that it's very helpful to have a teacher. I know that there are meditation tapes, there are meditation books, and some people seem to do fine with those. I do better when there's a person who can teach me. And I think that it is helpful in the beginning to have either a class or a group to help with the daily discipline of the meditation. I think that any type of meditation needs to begin with some process of causing the physical body to relax and slow down. So the practice of Hatha Yoga, I really like that practice. Some people like Tai Chi or something like that. And then using some form of breath or breathing exercises to cause the breath to slow down. And the reason why that's so important is the breath ties the soul to the body. So if you think about times when you're anxious, maybe you're driving in traffic and somebody cuts you off, or you have an immediate scare, what happens is that your heart starts to beat faster, your breath becomes much more rapid, and it's nearly impossible to get your attention off of your body. So to reverse that, doing some kind of slow, rhythmic, deep breathing can help to produce more calm in the body and then more calm in the emotions, so then it becomes easier to cause the thoughts to slow down.
Great. And what are the benefits of meditation? I mean, it's been around for a long time, and there's been a lot of research, but can you summarize some of the benefits?
Yes. One of the main benefits is that people find they become more calm, more peace, more centered. Therefore, their relationships improve. They tend to become better reasoners. They are more able to approach stressful situations with a kind of calm, not a passivity, but a greater calm and ability to think rather than react. There also are amazing benefits of meditation globally. It's been quite a while now, but in 1993, there was an experiment that was done in Washington, D.C. with a group of people over a few month period of time, I think it was 2 months, who practiced meditating consistently for the purpose of reducing crime, and there was a 23.3% drop in violent crime. I mean, that's huge.
Right.
If you think about even a very small percentage of the population meditating every day and how that could improve the crime rate, and therefore how that could improve people's peace of mind, that's huge if you think about the implications for the world, in addition to the implications for the individuals who are doing the meditation.
And is there a source on the internet that would have the research that's been done on meditation that you know of?
I don't know if there's just one resource. That study about the reduction of crime is on a site called worldpeacegroup.org. The School of Metaphysics has a site called peacedome.org, peacedome.org, that has some research about meditation.
Great. I think
that if somebody does a Google search and they put in benefits of meditation or research on the benefits of meditation, they probably could find more than that also.
Great, good. Then, Dr. Clark, can you give us an example of how a cancer patient might use these techniques in their process of recovery?
Yes. This is something that I think is sometimes difficult for anybody with illness to become aware of. I believe and have found through my own experience, as well as people I've been close to who have had serious diseases, that there is always some lesson for anybody who's dealing with illness.
Oh, good.
So in regard to meditation and dreams, it can be very helpful to ask a question like, what do I need to understand through this illness? Or what do I need to understand from this illness? And the reason why I think that's important is that there are all kinds of things we can do to get rid of symptoms, to cover up symptoms, to block symptoms. However, until we have the understanding that that condition is bringing to us, oftentimes the symptoms come back or they show up in a different place. So, for example, I went through a period that I just felt like I was exhausted all the time. And I didn't really have any physical disorder. I didn't really know why I was so tired. And I was doing a particular healing practice. And all of a sudden, I had the insight that at that time in my life, I felt like I was, I was kind of feeling sorry for myself and going through a martyr type situation of always feeling like I was taking care of other people, but nobody was taking care of me. And the insight that came to me was that if I had more energy, there would be more people who could take from me. And so whether that was true or not, that people were taking from me, in my mind and in my experience, that's what it felt like. So the benefit for me in being exhausted is that people couldn't take from me anymore. Now, that might seem kind of twisted as, in terms of a benefit, but it was hugely illuminating to me because it told me what I needed to change and that if I truly wanted to give to people, I needed to do it, as it says in the Bible, God loves a cheerful giver, that I should not be giving like a martyr. I needed to be a cheerful giver. And so it changed everything for me to practice something different. And I became energized in a way that I hadn't been in a long time.
Well, one thing you brought up that's so important, too, is that you said, ask, what is the lesson in this for me? Which puts it in a positive context again, instead of you could have said, well, why is this happening to me? I mean, I'm a good person and all of this, and, you know, why has it happened to me? Which is a very negative response. And yet saying, what is the lesson in this for me, puts it in a positive response, a positive place. And again, I think that our thoughts, if we keep them positive, are so important in our life experiences. So I think that's really great to remind us of putting things in that context.
Yes, I agree. In fact, I know somebody right now who's dealing with a very difficult form of cancer. It's very rare. And he's been going through some extreme medical procedures. And some of his friends put together a fundraiser where there were hundreds and hundreds of people who came to the fundraiser. And he was so overwhelmed by the tremendous outpouring of love that was part of what he realized is that having this cancer was giving him an opportunity to find out just how many people there are who love him, how many friends he has, I mean, from many years back that he had no idea that he had had any influence in their lives. So, you know, it may not be a pleasant way to learn the lesson, but it can be very profound also.
Right, right. I think so often when we go through those experiences, they may be difficult at the time, but in retrospect, we can see the lesson we were to have learned and see how positive that experience was. And I, you know, I think of my own experience of going through lung cancer. You know, in retrospect, people ask me, why did you have that experience? Well, you know, it's very obvious that I had that experience so that 41 years later, I can say to people, because my doctor told me, you'll be dead in 6 months. And
wow.
So they say this to a lot of cancer patients, so I can say to them, I was given that diagnosis 41 years ago, and I'm still here. And that is not a medical diagnosis, that's a God diagnosis, and only God knows when we're going to die. And I think just
right.
hearing from someone that has gone through that, that are still here, gives people hope that there is, you know, a chance that they can overcome the cancer.
Absolutely. That's very inspiring to hear.
And so I think that, you know, as we learn to see things as opportunities, it's an experience that can be rewarding to us instead of a devastation. Then, Dr.
Yes.
Clark, is there anything else you would like to say about dreams, meditation, visualization, before we look at your services and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, I hope that people who are listening today realize how many resources we have available. And sometimes when people are going through a hard time, whether it's with physical illness or finances or relationships, they can feel kind of helpless and maybe hopeless. And that's where I think it's very valuable to know that even if it seems like the outer resources aren't there, there are always inner resources. We can always call upon a higher power through meditation. We can call upon the inner power through dreams and picture what we want rather than dwelling on what we don't want.
Great. Then, Dr. Clark, would you tell us about your services, books, products, and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes. I am the author of a number of books, including one on dreams called Intuitive Dreaming, and a book on visualization that is called The Law of Attraction and Other Secrets of Visualization. Those books are available through Amazon.com or through the School of Metaphysics, which publishes them. And the School of Metaphysics website is www.som, as in School of Metaphysics, .org. If people want to contact me individually, they can reach me through Laurel Jan, that's LaurelJan, at yahoo.com. And I also do individual dream counseling. I do counseling and coaching to help people explore and either recover or uncover or discover their creativity. I find that when people are creative, they tend to be more full of joy and healthier and happier. So I would love to help people who are interested in that.
Do you have a website, or is it just the website of the Metaphysical Association?
I don't have my personal website. I'm in the process of making a website. If people want to connect with me on Facebook, my name on Facebook is Laurel Fuller Clark. And so I would be glad to friend anybody who wants to connect with me that way.
Good. Great. Good. Well, this has been very interesting and helpful to me, and I know it'll be helpful to the listeners because these are three very important techniques or processes that people can use to deal with a lot of life issues, including health and illness. So I really appreciate this very much.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being on your show, and I'm very inspired by your own healing journey, and thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.